She's working on the Data to Care project and electronic laboratory reporting. Prior to this, Melissa was an associate at Johns Hopkins University in Afghanistan, where she evaluated health projects. Melissa received a master's in science and public health from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health in 2010.
Thank you. Hi. So I've been working on a pilot project in Texas for the past 2.5 years that uses provider data and surveillance data to identify HIV-positive persons that have fallen out of care or have never been in care and assist in re-engaging them in care. So today I'm going to give an overview of the Texas Data to Care project, including the background of the project and current data to care process. Then I'm going to share some of the characteristics of persons we identified as out of care and preliminary results from Austin Travis County and Dallas County. So I'm going to start by providing an overview of HIV in Texas, the background of the project, and our current process. This is the Texas HIV population treatment cascade. There are over 76,000 people diagnosed and living with HIV in Texas at the end of 2013, but only around 57,000 of those had any evidence of medical care, and even fewer were retained in care or virally suppressed. There are many opportunities along the continuum of care that interventions are needed to improve health status of persons living with HIV and reduce transmission rates. Since there were nearly 20,000 persons with no evidence of care, Texas chose to focus on this group when a new funding opportunity became available. So, as I said, Texas chose to focus on individuals with no evidence of HIV-related medical care. And this included both persons that had fallen out of care and those that had never engaged in care. We also wanted to assess the feasibility and effectiveness of data to care and determine the best mechanism for identifying persons out of care. Pilot sites were selected in Austin and Dallas based on morbidity and local health department resources. So this is kind of the general structure of the project, and we'll go into more detail about each step over the next few slides. Line lists of persons not in care are generated and sent to the local health department for additional investigation. If the person is eligible and willing, we would then assist them getting back into care. So the first step in the process is to identify people that are not in care. There are two different mechanisms that we use to do this. Medical providers identify persons with no recent medical visit or multiple missed appointments. Independently, we use HIV surveillance data to identify people that have fallen out of care. So HIV surveillance data is also routinely matched to other databases. And this includes Ryan White, our Texas HIV medication program, Accurate LexisNexis, and criminal justice data. And all of this data is imported into our surveillance system. People with no evidence of care are randomly selected out of everyone in our surveillance system. So disease intervention specialists, or DIS, were trained and designated for re-engagement activities. They receive lists of persons from either the provider or HIV surveillance. They would then perform some additional record searches, and this includes jails and prisons and Accurate LexisNexis. And so, as I said, some of the information from Accurate is in our surveillance system, EHARS, but the match is only conducted yearly, so the DIS will manually search for more up-to-date information. They would then conduct at least 3 phone calls and field visits to verify that the person is living in the jurisdiction, not in care. So if the person is found to be eligible and willing, the DIS then helps them schedule a medical or intake appointment, prepares paperwork, and provides other assistance as needed. They would not be considered re-engaged in care until they actually attend the medical appointment. So now I'm going to share some of the characteristics of those that we identified as out of care. So after the DIS receives the line list of persons out of care, they would investigate each case to determine if they were eligible for linkage to care. If the person is living, residing in the jurisdiction, not in care, and not incarcerated, they are eligible. So from surveillance data, 506 persons were selected, and 282 of those were found to be eligible. From provider data, 383 were selected, and 236 of those were eligible. The reasons for ineligibility were similar for both methods of selection. The most common reason was that they were already engaged in care, followed by that they had moved. and this includes both moved in-state to another jurisdiction, out-of-state, or out-of-country. So we identified some laboratory reporting gaps to this project, and this includes the VA in clinical trials, which is one of the main reasons so many identified by surveillance were found to be already in care. And so this slide compares the characteristics of persons selected by providers in surveillance by age, race, sex, and transmission category. The biggest difference in the groups selected is by sex. Providers selected a larger proportion of females in surveillance. So this chart shows the length of time persons were out of care by method of selection. Persons selected by surveillance had been out of care longer or were never in care compared with those selected by providers. This is mainly because surveillance selected out of all persons out of care, while providers were limited to persons that had dropped out of care from their facility. So now I'm going to share some preliminary results from Austin and Dallas. So this slide compares the success of linkage to care by those found to be eligible by method of identification. So 45% of those identified by a provider and 21% selected by surveillance were linked to care. Overall, those identified by surveillance had been out of care longer and were more difficult to locate. The success of re-engagement in care varied significantly by how long the person had been out of care. The success of linkage to care was over 3 times as great for people that had been out of care for less than 6 months versus those that had never been in care or were out of care for greater than 4 years. The unknown category here includes people that have not been in care since all CD4s and viral loads became reportable in Texas in 2010. So we actually didn't find any significant differences in the success of linkage to care by age. We were kind of surprised by this result. We expected those in the younger age groups to have lower success rates. And it's possible that those in the younger groups were diagnosed more recently and easier to locate. We did find significant differences by race and sex, with the highest success rate actually among Black females. And I didn't display the white females and Hispanic female rates because the denominators were less than 10. They were very small groups. So there is actually an almost 10% difference between the success rate between heterosexuals and all other groups. This difference wasn't actually significant. So this is a summary of the results of the logistic regression. Persons identified by a provider, those that had been out of care a shorter time, who were female or Black, all had a significantly better odds of being successfully re-engaged in care. And all the other predictors we tested weren't significant, including age. So although we were able to engage more persons identified by a provider than surveillance back in care, the health status of the two groups upon reentry was different. More persons identified by a provider were already virally suppressed when they reentered care. However, around the same percentage in both groups were virally suppressed within 1 year of reengagement. So in closing, I'd like to share a few success stories as well as some challenges and future directions of the project. So the first success story is a Black female. She was diagnosed in 2001 and she was identified as out of care by a provider in Dallas. She'd been out of care almost 3 years. We were able to locate her after quite a few phone calls and field visits and link her back into care in March 2013. She had a viral load of over 70,000. We were able to achieve viral suppression within a year of being linked back to care. The second story is a Black male that was diagnosed in 2012. He had never been previously engaged in care, so we were able to locate him and link him into care in September 2013. And he actually had a viral load of over 500,000 and an AIDS-defining CD4 count. And we were able to achieve viral suppression within 7 months of linking him back to care. So there are many challenges that we continue to face in the project. Many of our medical providers have already surpassed their capacity, and this is especially true of some of our Ryan White providers. We've had wait times of 60 to 90 days at some of those facilities. Texas is a large state and has almost 20,000 persons out of care. Unfortunately, it's not feasible for us to follow up everyone, and so we still have to prioritize who we want to follow up and are still working to identify the best mechanism to do this. And so although all CD4s and viral loads are required to be reported, there are still gaps in reporting. It can be also very difficult and time-consuming to locate someone that's been out of care for years. We've made significant, I think, improvements in our surveillance data, but even matching ADAP and ARIES and all these other databases, sometimes we still don't have updated and accurate contact information for everyone. So in conclusion, persons identified by a provider are more likely to be successfully linked to care, but the biggest predictor is actually the length of time out of care. And so health status in the two groups have improved to similar levels, but those identified by surveillance started with fewer people virally suppressed. So in the future, we hope to plan to use what we've learned in this pilot phase to prioritize different groups for linkage to care, and are looking into some additional funding opportunities and hoping to expand to some additional health departments throughout the state. We would also like to see some of the re-engagement activities become more integrated with HIV and STD activities. Right now, it's a very separate project. Any questions?
Carolyn, my question is about the time out of care and the success of getting people back into care, the shorter time they're out of care. Do you have any insights from this project on whether the success rate is related to is it that people out of care for a long time have a lot of reasons to be out of care, and therefore it's going to be hard no matter when in that time frame you get them? There's a subset of people who are just going to have a hard time staying in care, and therefore they are out of care for a long period of time. Or if you get people early, do you prevent them from being a long-term out of care people? I'm having trouble framing my question. Right. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. So the longer someone was out of care, I think there wasn't significant differences. Like the less than 6 months had like 60% or 70% linkage to care. But 1 to 2 years, 2 to 4 years, those were all fairly similar linkage to care rates, and it really dropped off after 4 years. And so I don't know if that's, we had a lot of unable to locate in that group, and so that may be a lot of what it is. And it's hard to say how many of those, especially in the less than 6 months or less than 1 year group, would have linked back into care on their own without like another control group. It's hard to know what percentage of those would have re-engaged on their own.
Hi. Ben Gordon, New York State. I'm particularly interested in that group who's been out of care for 48 months or more. When you go out and you start beating the bushes trying to find them, what fraction of them can you actually locate at all, let alone whether you can get them back to care? Which fraction do you actually find or not find at all? And the reason I'm asking that is that the fraction you can locate at all are very important to us because New York and some other states have actually started toying with the experiment with the idea of taking people who we heard nothing about for 5 years or so and dropping them from some of our calculations about who's out there even included in the population. And if you have evidence that says that some of these people who've been gone for 4 years or more actually are there, 10%, 15%, whatever that number is, I'd like to know about it because these are people who are at the risk of being dropped from inclusion in our denominator.
So a lot of those are, I don't remember the exact percentage, it was like 50% of those selected by surveillance, almost 50%, were unable to locate. And so most of those were either they have never been in care or they've been out of care for more than 4 years. So it's a large percentage of those. And that's after doing all the matches and importing all the accurate data. And so that's not including people that we were able to make out of state and we knew that had moved from all those different sources. So we still have a there's probably a good portion of those, I would imagine, that are living out of state or something. I can get you the exact numbers, though.
Hi, I'm Tom Janicki from Washington State, and I'm curious about the provider piece of it and them identifying people out of care. That's not something that we typically do, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that process in terms of how it works from the provider's end. Is it something they do regularly? Do they get compensated for it, that sort of thing?
They don't get compensated for it. So one of our health departments set up some MOUs with two different providers in the area, and we've actually found it works better also for surveillance when you set those up, because they're more likely to set medical appointments and step aside if they're actively involved in the project. So we've had better success with both the surveillance and the provider in that particular jurisdiction. And so they would attempt to contact the person first on their own. They would do phone calls and send out letters. And if they're not able to reach them, that's when they would send it to the health department. And so this is done on a weekly basis. Either surveillance is sending them a list 1 week, and then providers send it. So every week they're getting a list of persons out of care, whether it's from us or whether it's from a provider. And so they send them in the health department, would give some feedback. We are limited on how much with the surveillance information we can give back to the providers, but we would either link them back into care there or let them know. We were not able to find them. They're already in care. We would give them a vague. It's been pretty helpful, even if for that appointment slot, because that other site, I think it's been more than 3 months at the other site because they weren't able to set appointments aside in our thing. So it's been a good experience, I think. The combination has worked well.
Was it hard to get them to agree to do it?
No, they seemed pretty excited about it, I guess you could say. Yeah. So we didn't have any issues. At the same time, we weren't able to get any providers on our other site, so we've kind of had a mix. And I think that's a lot about health department relationship with those providers and being able to set up those local health departments. So.
One question. Hi, Wilson Miranda.
Can you come to the microphone? The questions are being recorded.
Okay. Wilson Miranda from New York State. So I'm not sure if you said this during your presentation, but I was curious as to, did you document the reasons people were out of care? And because that would be useful in eventually trying to determine people in similar situations and trying to look at the care.
Yes, we did. I didn't say that in here, but yes. So we asked for everybody that we located, we asked why you had been out of care. And for those that refused, we also asked why are you refusing. So the main reason other life issues, like whether it be like work or childcare or something else, was just more important. We also had a decent number of people with transportation issues or trying to hide their status. I mean, we didn't really find anything unexpected in those reasons. It's kind of the same reasons you keep hearing over and over. There was a few that had bad experiences with the previous provider or something like that as well.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much, Marcy.